Hey, Flying Squad, welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This episode of the podcast is proudly brought to you by Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA. Look him up on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on Instagram so you can see the beautiful bulldogs that he raises and sells. Instagram.com/UniqueKennels. Please do that. Please, please, please do that. Now, you are listening to Radio Flying with Flying Brian. And on this episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about MMA opinions and news. Of course, it's mostly opinions, not going to bring you too much news. Today's topics will include the return of Rampage Jackson to the UFC, coming back to the devil he knows from Bellator. We're going to recap UFC Fight Night 58 a little bit, and then a little bit of what we're going to talk about today is looking forward to UFC 182, which happens in 2 weeks from the time that I'm recording this fucking podcast, on January 3rd from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Is it called the MGM Grand Garden? I don't know. The MGM Grand in Las Vegas, Nevada. This episode of the podcast, Flying Squad, thank you for joining me here today, Flying Squad. It's just going to be me, Flying Brian. I will not have a guest again this time, but next week, look forward to hearing from my older brother, Big C, who will be in attendance at UFC 182. He's hoping for a DC victory, and so I guess I'm going to take the side of Johnny Bone. I'm kidding. Big C is a big Johnny Bones fan, and so he will be taking the side of Johnny Bones, giving us reasons why Johnny Bones will have a victory, and I will be trying to come up with reasons why Daniel Cormier will be your new UFC 205-pound champion. Today on this episode, let's start with talking about the return of Quentin Rampage Jackson to the devil he knows, the UFC. During the live and free broadcast on Fox Sports 1 for UFC Fight Night 58, there was a shocking announcement made that Quentin Jackson would return to the UFC. It wasn't that shocking. Everyone that's been on Twitter in the last 7 days before UFC Fight Night 58 in Sao Paulo, Brazil, was well aware that Quentin Jackson was planning to return to the UFC. Quentin Jackson had put out some pretty telling tweets saying that he was going to return, so he kind of spoiled his own coming home party, so that was dumb of him. But anyway, he did that. So, like the CM Punk signing, a lot of people were like, oh man, this isn't a good signing, you know, why would he come back to the UFC? And people say that when Rampage Jackson left the UFC, people were saying, good, he's washed up, get him out of here, we don't even need him, get Rampage out of here. And then, so the MMA media were saying, oh, I think it's funny how those same people that were saying get him out of here when he lost 3 in a row are the same people that are like, yeah, we want him back, we're fucking jazzed about having him back. But are those two things really happening? Where people actually like, get him out of here, we don't need him? And are those same people saying, yay, I love him, bring him back? Or are the MMA media members, who I don't know exactly who they are, but are they just making this shit up? Did this actually happen, or are they just storming up ideas for stuff to write about? There's one thing in my career of doing this here fucking podcast is that MMA media members are just like me and you, except for they like to write shit. You know, they're not actually on any news channel, or they don't actually write for a newspaper. They're just random dudes that have regular-ass jobs that on Sunday mornings, when they're not doing anything else, write about the UFC fight card that happened the night before. Or they stay up late and write about it right after the fight card happens, and then they sleep in on Sunday. But the point is, they're just regular guys. They don't even have a media job in general. They could be your fucking garbage man. You know, they come and pick up your garbage on Saturday, and then Saturday night, they write a paper about it. So, that's really interesting. So my point is, are these things actually happening? Are there people that are actually, we're actually sad when he left, or happy when he left, and now happy when he's coming back. I'm not sure either way. I think that everyone's probably pretty pumped that Quentin Rampage Jackson is coming back to the UFC. Now, it's a standard thing that when a fighter loses three in a row in the UFC, that they usually get the boot. And Quentin Jackson did lose three in a row before he went over to Bellator. And normally, if a big-name fighter like Quentin Rampage Jackson loses three in a row, they could get a fourth fight because they're a big name and they're a big draw. So they get like that one extra chance that a lower-tier fighter wouldn't get. I mentioned it on the podcast last week. If you pop into the UFC, you don't win any, you lose two, you're probably gone. And then you got to win like six at a regional show or something to be able to get a chance to come back. Or you could like win your first one, then lose your next three and you're gone. Or win two even and then lose three, gone. Win one, lose one, you know, every other. Yeah, that's three losses, you're 2-3, and you probably stick around. But one of the reasons why Quentin Rampage Jackson didn't get that fourth fight to get a chance to stay in the UFC is because he whined and bitched, and he said that the UFC caused him to go fucking broke. Okay, Rampage, yeah, that was their fault that you went broke. That's like NFL football players who make multi-million-dollar contracts per year going bankrupt after their first four seasons in the NFL. It's not the NFL's fault that you went broke, guy. That's probably your fucking poor managing skills. You should probably get Steve Nomics on that for you. So, Quentin Rampage Jackson, he lost to Johnny Bones Jones at a title fight back at September 24th of 2011. He lost by rear naked choke to Johnny Bones, and there's no harm in that. There's no fault in that. You lose to Johnny Bones. Everyone loses to Johnny Bones except for the immortal Matt Hamill. And then he lost to Ryan Bader by decision. Quentin likes to complain that Joe Silva put him against wrestlers. He was dick riding or whatever. And Ryan Bader probably bump and humped Quentin for 15 minutes. Probably. That's probably what happened. And then he lost the decision to Glover Teixeira, Glover the Rainbow Teixeira. And in that fight, Quentin looked terrible. You know, he hangs his hands a lot, and he does that, like, gator roll thing when he's standing to, like, avoid the punches, leans forward, and then so, like, they hit him on the top of the head and stuff, maybe hurts his opponent's hand, but that's pretty much all that he did. He even was so tired that he attempted a couple of takedowns, and at that point, before Johnny Bones stole Glover's soul, Glover had some pretty solid takedown defense there. And for one second, let's talk about fighters getting their soul stolen. Yeah. Glover Teixeira may have lost his soul to Johnny Bones when Johnny Bones whooped him for 25 minutes. It was a decision. Glover didn't get finished, but like in the first 30 seconds, Johnny Bones cranked his arm and probably hurt his glenohumeral joint, his shoulder. But so at UFC Fight Night 58 this past weekend, people were talking about how maybe TJ Dillashaw stole Henan Pagado's soul. You might know Henan Pagado as Henan Burrow, but that's not proper. Don't do that. Don't say their names like that, because Burrow is not this dude's last name. Burrow means the Baron in Portuguese. So if you're calling him Henan the Baron Burrow, you're saying Henan the Baron the Baron. It's stupid. So his name's Henan Pagado. And people think that maybe TJ Dillashaw stole Henan Burrow's soul. I don't understand the analogy or whatever, but Henan Burrow looked pretty decent against Mitch Gagnon this last Saturday at UFC Fight Night 58. It was a pretty tight fight going into the third round, and then Mitch Gagnon kind of gave up an arm triangle to Henan Burrow. So Henan Burrow came away with a finish, and, you know, he was facing a lesser opponent. He was, I think, minus 750 favorite, and for a minus 750 favorite to wait until, like, the mid to late third round you know, isn't that dominant. In my opinion, it's not -750 dominant, but, you know, what are you going to do? He secured the arm triangle at 353 of round number three. I mean, so he looked hittable. Mitch Gagnon was landing some strikes on Hennin, the Baron, Pagato, and, you know, Hennin Barão didn't look hittable, at least when he faced Uriah Faber. He did not look hittable. Uriah Faber, although he's, you know, one of the most popular bantamweights in the division, or he's one of the most popular fighters in the sport, and he's really good. He's only ever lost in title fights. His fight against Francisco Rivera at UFC 181 on the main event of the prelims, Francisco Rivera looked so much longer, you know, had a lot more reach than Uriah Faber, and Uriah Faber had to resort to Johnny Bone's technique with the eye poke to get the win, because up until that, he couldn't reach him. And Hennin Barão had a similar reach, has a similar reach. He didn't lose that reach. He still has it. And when he fought Uriah Faber, he looked like unhittable. And as you probably know that at UFC 169, when Uriah Faber stepped in to face Hennin Barão on late notice because Dominic Cruz pulled off with an injury and they couldn't get his title back then against Hennin Barão, that the fight between Hennin Barão and Uriah Faber ended controversially, similar to my buddy Kid Chaos's loss to John Duval at Bellator 129 in Council Bluffs, Iowa, which I was in attendance at. Hennin Barão was hitting Uriah Faber with hammer fists while Uriah Faber had started a takedown attempt but wasn't really finishing it. Uriah Faber put his thumb up to indicate to Herb Dean that he's doing fine. I guess Herb Dean saw the thumbs up from Uriah Faber as giving up. No, he didn't see it. He called it over from TKO because Uriah Faber wasn't fighting back. He was asking Uriah Faber to fight back, and Uriah Faber's way of fighting back was putting the thumbs up. And while, you know, as a TV viewer, we can see that thumb really fucking easily, and we're like, hey, yeah, he's good to go. Herb Dean obviously couldn't see that thumb. And also, is a thumb up a proper way to defend yourself? If I get attacked on the street, or if I'm in a street fight, is putting my thumb up going to be a legit form of defending myself? You know, I don't think it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be sufficient. I mean, you can try it. You let me know. If you ever get in a street fight or a fight at all, and someone is hitting you in the face, just put your thumb up and you let me know if that effectively defends yourself. And then I'll let the flying squad know and we'll go from there. Speaking of Hennin Barão and the bantamweight division, Dominic Cruz tweeted out yesterday, I'm recording this shit on Tuesday, so on Monday, Dominic Cruz tweeted out that he has torn his ACL in the opposite knee from what he tore his ACL last time, or the last knee that he hurt. It's not the same knee that he hurt last time, but he tore his ACL, and he might be out for a long time again. So he sat out for almost 3 years. He come in at UFC 178, which was one of the best cards of this year, 2014, and he laid a fucking smackdown on Takeya Mizugaki, and he was showing awesome footwork for the entire minute that he was in the cage, and we're like, holy shit, if he fights TJ Dillashaw to try to get his title back, these dudes are going to be damn near dancing in the cage. There's so much footwork going on. And everyone, especially me, was super pumped that we're about to see that fight happen. And now Dominic Cruz is hurt again, so he's not going to be able to try to get his title back. Damn it. Son of a bitch. That fucking sucks. What are we going to do now? We better put in Rafael Assuncao. He deserves a shot because he's, what, the only fighter to ever beat TJ the Killashaw Dillashaw? So we're going to have to put in Rafael Assuncao to fight TJ Dillashaw. What? You? No. Rafael Assuncao tweeted yesterday that he's hurt too? Holy crap. He broke his ankle, you say? Good golly. Son of a gun. So what are we going to do now? All right. TJ Dillashaw has two losses. One's against John Dodson, a flyweight competitor. So that's interesting. TKO, first round, Ultimate Fighter 14. John Dodson's got some fucking amazing power for being 125 pounds. John Dodson's one of my favorite fighters. I was talking to the Flying Squad yesterday on Twitter and the day before too, and I said, hey, tell me your top five favorite fighters currently active in the sport of MMA. I had some pretty interesting, you know, answers. Some of my most responses I've ever got for a single tweet. And I think that I would probably put John Dodson in there because I like how he does the flip all the time off the cage a whole bunch. I like that he's 125 pounds and has amazing power. And I like that he loves video games and like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and stuff. So that's really cool. Back to who's next for TJ Dillashaw. Uriah Faber is a possible next competitor. Again, a lot of the MMA media were like, oh man, now we have to see TJ Dillashaw versus Uriah Faber. That's just what has to happen, I guess. The UFC, go ahead and offer these guys a bunch of money. They'll fight each other, no problem, right? And the rep from Team Alpha Male said, whoa, hold your horses, MMA media. What are you doing over here, guys? They're teammates, and they're not going to fight each other, okay? And, well, I am on that page with, I don't care to see them fight each other. They're from the same camp. They have the same coaches and stuff. They should have similar styles. I think TJ Dillashaw has more footwork. He's the younger fighter. I think TJ Dillashaw would beat Uriah Faber. And then what would it really prove? It wouldn't prove much to me, maybe to those MMA media people. It would prove a bunch, but it wouldn't prove that much to me. I would assume TJ Dillashaw would beat Uriah Faber. He's got the youth on his side. And obviously he can win title fights. He's won two of them. And Uriah Faber can't seem to win a title fight. So there's that. I don't want to endure the drama that's going to happen in leading up to that fight. That wouldn't be any fun for me at all. I don't want to see that. I don't want to be a part of that. You know they're going to sell it all soap opera-y because, oh, they're teammates and they're friends. And Uriah Faber was a mentor to TJ Dillashaw. I'm making shit up. But maybe they're going to do things like that. I don't even care to listen to that. So who should be next for TJ Killashaw Dillashaw? After Henan Burrell beat Mitch Gagnon, and you know he got a finish, I think Henan Pagato, the Baron, deserves his rematch now. He was supposed to get his rematch at UFC 177, couldn't make the weight, but could the factor be that that was in America? I mentioned last week that it wasn't because stricken drug testing. Is that why he didn't make weight at UFC 177? And Joe One Bad Mofo Soto had to step in and fight TJ Dillashaw on one day notice? Maybe. But so I think that we need to give Henan Burrell his rematch now. And again, a lot of people on the Twitter were saying that they don't want to see that fight happen right now. They think Henan Burrell needs to have three more wins to get back to his rematch. Why? You were fine with his rematch at UFC 177, and he didn't make weight. Now he made weight, and he got a finish. Why does he need three more fights? I don't understand. I say put him in. Let's see that fight again. You know, I've had one fight in between for each guy. Let's fucking do it. Unlike Johnny Hendricks and Rufus Robbie Lawler, you know, they're going to fight consecutive fights. I don't want to see that. Nobody wants to see that. And that went to a decision twice. We're going to see a third decision and probably another close one. Whoop-de-fucking-do. But TJ Dillashaw knocked Henan down in the first fight and then finished him later in the fight. That was a fun fight. And you can sell this fight by Henan Burrell coming for vengeance. I think it'd just be an easy sell, and that's the fight that I want to see next. So we've covered a little bit about UFC Fight Night 58 already. Let's look at the best part of UFC Fight Night 58, which was the main event. Lyoto, the Dragon Machida versus CB, the Doberman Dalloway. Leading up to this, like I usually do, I do a thing where I say, hey, favorite this tweet if you think this guy's going to win. Retweet, retweet this tweet if you think this guy's going to win. And the results of that for Liotto versus CB were pretty damn close. A lot of people were saying, CB's going to win, CB's going to win. And the reasons that people were saying he was going to win were that Liotto drinks his own pee. So they weren't really riding on any solid evidence why CB would win. I said on last week's podcast that he came out, his last victory was against Francis Carmont, who's no slouch. And I stick by that. Francis Carmont is no slouch. He's a very good pickup by Bellator. And, well, CB did not have anything for Lyoto Machida. Lyoto Machida looked absolutely fantastic on Saturday night against CB the Doberman Dalloway. He landed some nice punches before landing a devastating kick to the liver. Left kick to the liver. CB's face immediate was like, oh fuck, I'm screwed. I'm in super, super pain right now. And he crunched up, he turtled up against the cage, and Liotto finished him with some strikes. Probably didn't even need the strikes, could have just like walked away and been like, the dude ain't getting back up. But for the referee, you know, Liotto needed to finish with those strikes. And one of my favorite things about Lyoto Machida is a really respectable guy. Like when he knocked out Mark Munoz with a head kick, glanced off his glove, shin to the head, knocked him out. He could have landed two more strikes probably. You know, if it was another person, they probably would have landed two more strikes to the unconscious Mark Munoz. But Lyoto got down there, looked at his eyes, said, that dude's fucking out, pulled off, walked away, let the ref finish it, and then, you know, got down on his knees next to Mark because they're friends, and shook his hand and said, hey, man, sorry for knocking you out, but it's a job and I had to do it. Similar to that, after Lyoto beat CB, they went to the middle of the cage for the Lyoto to get his hand raised, and, you know, I don't know what the hell they said, but Lyoto put his hand on his chest and one on his back and, you know, talked to him in his ear. And then when he went to walk away, he touched him on the spot where he kicked him, and CB grimaced and was like, oh, god damn it. And Lyoto was like, oh, shoot. Oops. Sorry. I just fucking kicked you really hard in that spot, didn't I? And it hurts probably. Man. Whoops. Sorry. Ugh, that's on me. That's on me. My bad. My bad. And you can find the GIF on Reddit or Twitter or YouTube, whatever. Look that up, and you can see how respectful of a guy Lyoto Machida is in witnessing that interaction. What's next for Lyoto Machida, you're asking yourself? Because Lyoto Machida is super exciting. Well, it seems inevitable. Again, it's just the MMA media, and so do they have much standing? Now, Dana White and Luke Rockhold were tweeting right after Lyoto won. Luke Rockhold said to Dana White, wow, Machida looked great. I'm ready when you are, Dana. And Dana said, I've been ready for a while. I'll call you tomorrow. So it looks like Lyoto Machida's next fight will be against Luke Rockhold. Will it be in a main event fight? I'm pretty sure that it hasn't been announced. As of the recording of this podcast, that fight has not been announced. Lyoto versus Luke Rockhold. When that will be? So follow me on Twitter, at FlyingMMA. Look me up on the interwebs. My website is FlyingMMA.com. Like me on Facebook, Facebook.com/FlyingMMA. And you let me know who you think would win between Lyoto Machida and Luke Rockhold. Now, I watched this fight at a bar in my hometown, and I was cheering my face off when Lyoto won. Since I was at the bar, there was no sound, and I was unable to hear if Lyoto Machida thanked his sponsors or if his English is doing fantastic or anything like that. But I can only assume that he thanked Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA. You can find Unique Kennels on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on Instagram, Instagram.com/UniqueKennels. Raising healthy, affordable bulldogs for the last 30 years. And I do follow them on both things. And gosh darn it, those bulldogs are so cute. Cute little guys. The rest of UFC Fight Night 58 as a whole was a decent card. There was only three fights that went to a decision. One of which was Patrick Durkin-Cummins versus Antonio Shoeface, Carlos Jr. I don't know about you, but I could go for a burger right now. Hardee's, Carlos Jr. Hell yeah. And on the last episode of the podcast, I said that we were going into this fight card, and if you were going to play counter move, that Patrick Cummins was a pretty big favorite, but you still probably don't want to put him on your counter move team because he's probably going to bump and hump the shit out of Antonio Carlos Jr. And while Antonio Carlos Jr. did not shit his pants, Patrick Cummins did bump and hump the heck right out of him. He bump and humped him right to a 30-27 victory. Other notable names on the card were Eric Silva, made really quick work of Mike Biggie Rhodes. I said that I hope that Mike Biggie Rhodes would win because he's from Iowa. I Flyin' Brian am from Nebraska, USA. And so Mike Biggie Rhodes is from right across the border from me. But yeah, Mike Biggie Rhodes did not have anything for Eric Silva. Eric Silva laid the wood to him. And I said last time that Eric Silva is kind of a pretty dude, but obviously his fight against Matt Brown kind of dwindled his pretty face a little bit. At the end of UFC Fight Night 58, there was no fight of the night awarded because there was, like I said, three decisions on the fight card and none of them were that exciting. Jacqueline Diaz versus Darren Elkins went to a decision, and Jacqueline Diaz, Darren Elkins, you know, kind of wrestled him and then just kind of grinded him out. And Tim Means beat Marcio Alexandre, and Marcio needs to wash his back. If you have Fight Pass and you didn't happen to catch this fight, just go look at that fight and look at Marcio's back. It's pretty gross. It was really, really gross. Looks like he was mining some whiteheads on his back. It was super gross. Dude needs to wash that thing. So because there wasn't any fight of the night award, there was four performances of the night. Lyoto got it for that minute two stoppage against CB the Doberman Dolloway. Henan Barao got it for his arm triangle of Mitch Gagnon. Eric Silva got it for his arm triangle against Mike Biggie Rhodes. And Vitor Miranda got it for a head kick knockout of Jake Collier at 4:59 of round one in the first fight of the night. Jake Collier was doing really well against Vitor Miranda. Right up until like 10 seconds left, he had been controlling Vitor on the ground. Jake let him up and caught a head kick to the head. Obviously, he caught a head kick. And then, boop, over. Whoa, that's pretty crazy. And the most crazy part about that is Vitor Miranda had fought on a season of The Ultimate Fighter Brazil at heavyweight, and so this fight was at middleweight, two weight classes down. That's pretty intense. Next thing we need to do is slightly look forward to UFC 182. I'm not going to give too many reasons for who I think is going to win the main event this time. You'll have to wait till next week to see my thoughts on that, and also to hear from Big C for the first time ever. I have talked about him a lot of times, and next week we will finally hear from Big C. Also, I plan this podcast, as if you've been listening, is obviously about MMA opinions and news. And really soon, I also plan to have my first ever podcast about the greatest music genre in the world. Rock is the main genre, and then you got the subgenres: metal, metalcore, nu metal, regular ass rock. You got alternative. You got hard rock. Got punk rock. So hopefully soon I'm going to have a podcast with James Birdman Liebhart, and we are going to talk about that music, rock. I plan to have a local band. We're going to play a song at least from a local band, and we are going to say pass or fail. I'm probably going to make cooler words for it, but it's going to be either pass or fail for that song. And so we're going to go with that. But right now, let's talk about UFC 182. This will be one of the most looked forward to cards of 2015, and it happens 3 days into that year. The card is pretty damn stacked. Big C will be at this damn thing, and what a lucky fellow he is, because this thing is fucking awesome. The only bad part about this card is that it is in Las Vegas, Nevada. At UFC Fight Night 58, from the very first fight, Vitor Miranda versus Jake Collier, that fucking arena was packed to the gills. And that's how it should be, because at fight cards that are in Las Vegas, Nevada, people, at least in the front seats, aren't going to show up until Hector Lombard takes on Josh Berkman in the first fight of the main card on pay-per-view. I fucking hate that. Dude, there is some good fights on the prelims. And if I paid upwards of $400 to go to this damn thing, I'm seeing every fucking second of this thing. They open the doors at like 5 p.m. I am there waiting in line to get my seat to just start experiencing this shit. I'm taking pictures. I'm loving it. There's fucking Chuck Liddell's hanging out over there. I'm going to go shake his hand, meet him, and say, hey, I really like to watch you back when you were, you know, still fighting. Herb Dean's just kicking it. You know, I'm going to talk to him and be like, hey, why did you stop that fight with Uriah Faber? Didn't you see his thumb up? Don't you know that that's a proper way to defend yourself in a fight? Just put your thumb up. What are you doing, Herb? I'm going to experience the entire thing. I really hate UFC cards that are in Las Vegas because the crowd isn't there. As a viewer on TV, I like to see the fans' reactions. It's really fun for, you know, the crowd to go batshit crazy when Vitor Miranda hits a head kick with 1 second to go in the round and knocks out Jake Collier. That's fun as hell. But here we got, in the first fight of the night, we got Alexis Dufresne versus Marion Renau in a woman's bantamweight fight, 135 pounds, kicking off UFC 182 on the UFC Fight Pass prelims. They're going to be 13 fucking people at the MGM Grand when that happens. And then we got Omari Akhmedov versus Mats Nilsson. Mats? His first name's Mats? Okay. Anyway, during that welterweight fight, 170 pounds on UFC Fight Pass, there's going to be 14 people there. Then we're moving on to the prelims that are on Fox Sports 1. We got Evan Dunham versus Rodrigo Dam. There's going to be 15 people there, a lightweight contest. Then we got Sean Jordan versus Jared Cannonier. He's more cannon than you. Cannonier, Sean Jordan, heavyweight fight. 16 people are going to be there. Then we're moving on. We got a bantamweight fight between Marcus Brimage and Cody Garbrandt. 17 people there. Danny Castillo versus Paul Felder, lightweight fight. It's the main event for the prelims on Fox Sports 1. And that portion of the prelims starts at 7 p.m. my time, which is Central Standard Time, or 8 p.m. if you're in the Eastern, and 5 p.m. if you're on Pacific. So that's the Fox Sports 1 prelims start at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. The early prelims on Fight Pass start at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. I will be ready for them all. Danny Last Call Castillo versus Paul the Irish Dragon Felder. There'll probably be 18 people there for that main event of the prelims. And I hope that my brother, Big C, is one of those 18 people that, you know, I hope he's one of the 14 or 13 that started watching the first fight, the women's bantamweight fight. And I hope that he's within the 18 people that are there for the preliminary portion on Fox Sports 1 that starts at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. And then, all of a sudden, main card comes, and, you know, here comes Kevin Harvick, and here comes Shaq, maybe, I don't know. All these people are like, oh, hell, I guess main card time? I guess I'll go in my seat now. Hell, shit. I only paid $3,000 for this cage side seat. You know, I might as well make it for the main card portion of this thing. My thoughts are, if you're going to pay fucking $3,000 for that cage side seat and only come for the main card, give me your fucking ticket. I will only watch the prelims, and I'll give you your seat back for the main card. I'll go watch the main card on TV. That'd be fine with me. Hell, I'll give you $50 for that to happen. How about that? You know, that way you only pay $29.50 for your fucking cage side seat that you only want to show up for the main card portion. What are you doing with your life? Jeez, come on, show up for the whole fucking thing. How about that? Anyway, main card portion, we got Hector Lombard versus Josh Berkman. Hector Lombard said that Tyron Woodley ducked him, and that there was a lot of other people ducking Hector Lombard, so many so that they had to go poach Josh Berkman from the World Series of Fighting. Josh Berkman, former UFC fighter, he went over to the World Series of Fighting. He beat John Fitch with a guillotine choke. I mean, John Fitch, he's part of the class action lawsuit against the UFC, but what other notable thing has he done lately? Hector Lombard's new nickname is Showweather. So that's fucking really stupid. And Josh Berkman's nickname is the People's Warrior. I don't know how you get so pompous as to call yourself the People's Warrior. You're not the Rock, bro. You're not the Rock. Anyway, so there was some controversy with Josh Berkman coming back to the UFC from the World Series of Fighting. He claimed to have purposely lost a fight for the World Series of Fighting so that they would release him, because he said that they don't release champions. So I guess, sure, you want to be back with the big show, but I question your integrity. I hope that Hector Lombard stomps a mud hole in your ass. So there's that. Next up, we got Hyoji Horiguchi versus Louis Goodnight Gaudino. Goodnight Gaudino, I like that nickname. Gaudino is plus 475 to Horiguchi's minus 650. On the next episode of this podcast, where Big C will be on it, I will attempt to explain these odds to you a little bit more. But as for right now, I'm just going to throw you the numbers. Next up, Nate the Great Marquardt versus Brad Tavares. Nate the Great will be minus 135 to Tavares's plus 115. Next up, co-main event of the evening. It was at one time supposed to be Rowdy Ronda Rousey versus Kat Zingano, and that would have been pretty phenomenal for my brother and for everyone that's going to buy this pay-per-view. But that got moved over to UFC 184 because Ronda Rousey has the same manager as Chris Weidman, so she's going to now be the co-main event to Chris Weidman versus TRT-less Vitor Belfort. And now we have Donald the Cowboy Cerrone versus Miles Fury Jury. Donald the Cowboy Cerrone will come in. Right now he's at minus 200. I expect to see the line move a whole bunch to Miles Fury Jury's plus 170. And then we've got Johnny Bones Jones at minus 163 to Daniel Cormier's plus 143. That's a tighter line than Johnny Bones is probably used to. That fight is going to be really exciting, and I'm really looking forward to that. I can't wait, and I really can't wait to have Big C on this podcast so we can talk about it. And I will try to give my brother, will be picking Johnny Bones Jones, and I will be giving you reasons for a Daniel Cormier victory. Look forward to that on the next episode of Radio Flyin'. Remember, please go to Unique Kennels on Twitter and on Instagram and check him out, raising healthy, affordable bulldogs for the last 30 years. And even if you don't plan to buy a bulldog from Unique Kennels, just go check out the Instagram page and look at those beautiful little puppies. Instagram.com/Unique Kennels and on Twitter at UniqueKennels71. He's a great person, raising some beautiful bulldogs. Why would you not check him out, huh? If you don't check him out, I don't know what you're doing with yourself at all. Anyway, thanks for joining me here today on this episode of Radio Flyin' for some MMA opinions and news. I am Flyin' Brian, signing out. Namaste.